Bob Russell, who several years ago was the preacher for the largest Christian church in America, located in Louisville, Kentucky, remarked about his childhood. He said, "When I was a child, I once spied a tent, and I went up eagerly to the tent expecting to find a circus, and to my disappointment, I found a worship." He said, "Later on in my life, I walked into a worship once, expecting to find that worship, and instead found a circus." And I want us to think this morning, as we begin this series on worship, I want us to think about what it really means to worship. What is worship, and what is it that we attach to worship that makes it so meaningful to us? You see, there are many aspects of worship that we'll be discussing over the next few weeks. And as we think about this today, I want us to think just what is worship, and also what is our attitude towards worship? How are some of the aspects, and how do we make these things better for us? Worship sometimes is said to be all that we do in life, but really worship is a distinct action. Okay, we're still going to have to move this first slide. Okay, worship is a distinct action for us. And when we think about what it means to worship, sometimes we find a family of four might be coming to church for the purpose of worship, and as they're driving into church, they have a squabble or two. They've not had enough time that morning. They're not well rested. They stayed up too late the night before. The boy doesn't have matching shoes on. The girl didn't have time to fix her hair just right. Mom and dad are continuing an argument that they had the night before. And as soon as they get into the church parking lot and open the doors, everything seems to be fine. They put on their church Sunday morning faces, and they come, they greet everyone, and everyone has smiles. "How are you doing?" "Oh, I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing fine." And they have their pleasantries and social gatherings, and then they come into the auditorium for the purpose of worship. I want to tell you this morning that all of us have struggles. All of us have problems. Sometimes we don't get enough rest. Sometimes we haven't finished that argument. Sometimes our shoes don't match. Mine do today. But sometimes also we're not prepared when we come to worship. We don't have the mindset. We don't have the attitude towards God that I am here to worship God. There's a song that you might have heard from time to time. "Here I am to worship. Here I am to bow down. Here I am to say that you're my God." What is our purpose in worship? True worship is towards God and only God. He is the only God, and we know that, we believe that, and we follow that. But there are other objects and other so-called gods, small g gods, that are worshipped and have been worshipped all throughout time. There's the Temple of the Thousand Buddhas, and this is over in Asia, and this Temple of the Thousand Buddhas has a multitude of Buddhas, more than a thousand, but all of these small little statues and statuettes, these little idols of Buddha. And the concept is that you go into this Temple of the Thousand Buddhas, and you find one that looks like you or appeals to you, and that is the Buddha statue to which you worship. Well, that's kind of silly, isn't it, to think that I can go and pick out the God that I like? I can find the one that's either the right complexion, or the right size, or the right height, or whatever, and that's the one that I'm going to worship. But yet, that's what some people do. They're going to worship these things. Our English word for worship comes from worship, meaning that we're worthy of this type of honor to be bestowed upon some others. But as we go a little deeper here, I want us to think about what worship entails. Worship in itself is an act, and so it requires a worshiper, and that's us, the people. We are not the audience, although there are many settings in which worship would be primarily conducted or performed by a select number of people, and then the others would be there not to do anything during that entire time except simply to listen. We sing corporately all together. Hopefully all of us sing. I like it when we're all participating. We participate in the Lord's Supper as well. We participate through our prayers and through the readings of the Bible and these types of things and through our offerings as well. But when we think about our worship, that we are not the audience, but we are the participants. God is the object of our worship, and we must have an object of our worship in this. Look at a few of these passages with me, if you will. The first one is Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 8. We have several of these passages that we'll touch on just very briefly to establish the context here that we're talking about, that we need an object for our worship. In Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 8, Isaiah here is recording about the house of Jacob. and how the house of Jacob has gone away. And he ends this chapter by saying, sever yourselves from such a man whose breath is on his nostrils, for of what account can he be? But in verse 8, and we'll go down maybe to verse 9 too. Their land is also full of idols. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. People bow down and each man humbles himself. Therefore, do not forgive them. They are worshiping what? The idols which they made with their own fingers. They're worshiping these things for which they ought not. In Romans chapter 1, and listen, if you're in Romans chapter 1 doing your daily Bible reading, you begin in Romans chapter 1, it seems pretty good until you get to about verse 18. Then it goes downhill really, really fast. But let's look at just verses 21 through 23 here. Paul trying to tell the church in Rome about the difficulties here that so many people have chosen other than God. And he says, because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. These are not good things for us to have, for this type of change to take place. Matthew chapter 4 and verse 10, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. Okay? We're only supposed to be worshiping God. Only supposed to be worshiping God. Him only shall we worship. So worship requires an object. Now, you may recall also over in the Old Testament book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 3, there were three friends of Daniel there, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And those three were caught up in a scheme. And the scheme was thus. The king had made this great gold image and had been convinced that everyone in the kingdom should bow down and worship that gold image when the band struck up. And so when the music began, everyone was to fall down, bow down, and worship that gold image. But these three gentlemen did not bow down. They did not worship. Now, we'll get to the word for bowing down and worship in a minute, proskuneo, and the prominence throughout the Bible that we find. And it is the process of prostrating oneself, of falling down so that we are worshiping this. Well, the object of our worship should be God. It should not be an idol. It should not be a sports team. It should not be our smartphone. It should not be any other such thing that we have. By the way, since I managed to say smartphone, mine is turned off. If somebody calls me now, it's not going to ring. But I saw an interesting term this past week in an article asking the question, are we becoming schmombies? All right, now, you may know what a zombie is, okay, the living dead, walking the living dead, all that's been popular in our culture lately. What in the world is a schmombie? S-M-O-M-B-I-E. A schmombie is a smartphone zombie. Okay, now it makes perfect sense once you get back past the uniqueness of the title, but the article was talking about how our smartphones have turned us into antisocial beings to where in some cases there are some cities now that they have embedded in the sidewalks the instructions about crossing the intersections. They had to embed that in the sidewalks because people are walking along with their smartphones. They're not looking up. They're walking into the intersections, and they're making themselves into a dangerous type of person. I think that there are many things in our life and in our culture today that compete so heavily for our time and attention that we cannot even spare 1 hour to come and to worship God in spirit and in truth, to give God our whole focus. Another thing I read just recently talked about Jesus when he left the dinner and went out into the garden to pray and took Peter, James, and John with him. And he's just looking to pray there. And he says, here, you wait for me. And he comes back and he finds them sleeping. And he said, this article was talking about the fact that, you know, this was the first account, you know, of unauthorized sleeping in church. And we have that all throughout the ages. But they said, had that happened in today's culture, they would not have been sleeping. They wouldn't have been sleeping. One would be texting, the other one would be Googling, and the third one would be watching a YouTube video. They wouldn't be sleeping, but they wouldn't be waiting on Jesus as they should be doing. We have God in our presence. We have gods that we follow. We have devices. We have TV. We have media. We have sports. We have all kinds of things in our lives that compete directly for our attention from God. And they even compete during this hour. A couple of weeks ago, our boys were here, and I was teaching the college-age class. I looked up, and both of them had their phones out. Carl, I had to call them down and tell them to put their phones away. I've taught the high school class here. I don't call anybody down that, but there were some that texted the entire time I was teaching through the entire term. They always were looking at their devices. Here I am to worship. Here I am to bow down. Here I am to say that you're my God. Who is the object of our worship? It should be God Almighty. And during this time, and especially during this time, we should be able to separate ourselves from these other things in our lives. Let's look over to Matthew chapter 22, verses 37 and 38. That's the reference there. I gave the wrong reference a moment ago. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. The reference in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 10 was, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. But when we think about what it means to be doing this, to worship God and to follow him and to do the things that we ought to be doing, how do we do this and how do we know that we're acceptable in God's sight? Well, tonight's lesson is going to be on, does God accept our worship? And I think it's a very good question for us to ask. Because when we do worship, we want to be acceptable. We want to be pleasing to God. We want to be found in his pleasure. We don't want to do something that irritates God, that upsets him, or that causes us to go through all this for nothing or in vain. And that's going to lead us into Matthew chapter 15 now, verses 8 and 9. And Jesus here is quoting here from Isaiah, but he says, hypocrites in verse 7, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, and in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. When we have these particular attitudes that come into life, and where we are the worshiper, but when the object of our worship is the device in our hand or something else rather than God during this time, then we're worshiping in a way that is not right. There are some distractions from worship, and there are also some digressions of worship that we get into later as well. How men have perverted worship and changed it up to be according to what we want instead of what God wants. Remember, we are not the audience. God is the audience. We are the participants. We are the ones giving the worship in our life. Well, let's look on at the attitude that we might have in worship. David said that he was glad when they said it was time to go into the house of the Lord. Are we glad when it's time for us to assemble for worship? When we think about coming to worship, coming to the time when we're here, we know about Hebrews 10 and verse 25, don't forsake the assembling of ourselves together. And you've heard me preach on that in that context, there's one negative or stated thing in the negative, don't forsake. But there are also three very positive things there about the reason why we come together. It's not only to worship God, but it's also that we might build each other up in love and good works and to exhort each other. And so as we come together, there's a purpose for us coming together. And the fellowship time that we have is very important. That's a part of our gathering together. But the time that we come and have for worship is to be consecrated and dedicated to God. We should not be forsaking the assembly. We should be thankful about the time that we have to come and worship God. Let's look over to Psalm 100 just briefly. Psalm 100 is a short psalm that talks about how our attitude can be what it should be when we come before God. Here, this is a psalm of thanksgiving. Make a joyful shout to the Lord, all you lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know that the Lord, he is God. It is he who has made us and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful to him and bless his name. For the Lord is good. His mercy is everlasting and his truth endures for all generations. Notice some of the things that the psalmist brings out here, that we ought to know the Lord, that he is God. God, I know that you're God, and I know that I'm not. Therefore, I know that whatever you say is what I should be doing, and not the other way around. We should not be turning this upside down and positioning it in such a way as the Bible says, as the clay might turn back to the potter and talk about the potter. Look, the clay is what is formed by the potter, not the other way around. God has formed us, not we ourselves forming God. Also, he says, enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful to him. What has God done for you? Oh, you know all that God's done for you, but sometimes we forget about that. You see, when Dad's sitting back and during this hour, instead of focusing on what's going on, I know he's sang singing the songs and he's bowing his head during the prayer and he's looking intently at the preacher as he preaches, but his mind is 1,000 miles away. His mind is on the business dealings that he's got to go through this week and on fixing the problems from last week. And I know sometimes that moms are sitting there and they're trying their best to worship, but sometimes they're just not ready for worship. And so they themselves finally get a moment to rest. And they might drift off for a moment. And then we find that our children sometimes, too, they struggle with things. My good friend Adam Fawn, who preaches down at Haleville, he wrote an excellent article this past week. I put it on the church's Facebook page. And it was talking about our children and some of the video games that they play during worship service. I really wasn't aware of this quite so much until I read that article and began talking with other people. Last week we were at a funeral visitation up in Lewisburg, Tennessee. One of our elders up there, Glenn Hardison, a wonderful man, had passed away. And as we were waiting in line for 2 hours to get in to the family, we came around and in one of the lobby areas there was what was called a quiet bag that was off to the side, a bag that was there for moms to take to their kids and had some Bible study lessons and some things to help the kids occupy their time. I'm not saying it's wrong for us to help our children to do things that can help them be quiet and stay still while we're in worship. But parents, when we're teaching our children, let's not teach them to play Minecraft or other games while we're in worship. Let's not teach them to do these things. Let's give them something that can also turn their hearts towards God. And by the way, while we're talking about it for us as adults, let's also do things that help us turn our heart towards God as well. Be thankful towards God. Another part of our attitude comes from Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. Let's take a look at that as well. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Now, I want you to imagine that you're in the place of Isaiah. I want you to imagine that you're in this wonderful place and all these things are happening around you. And above it stood seraphim. One had 6 wings, with 2 he covered his face, with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he flew. And one cried to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory." And the posts of the door were shaken by the voice of him who cried out. And the house was filled with smoke. And so I said, "Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts." Then one of the seraphim flew to me, and having in his hand a live coal which he had taken with the tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth with it and said, "Behold, this has touched your lips. Your iniquity is taken away and your sin purged." And I also heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send and who shall go for us?" And then I said, "Here I am, send me." I can't imagine really the vividness of this setting. And to be there and have the presence of the Lord to come into this room and to shake this. And you see these seraphim as they're coming around and knowing, "I'm not worthy, I'm unclean." And yet here he is and he consecrates him and to make him such. When we enter into this place or any place to worship God, we ought to be reviewing our life. We ought to be reviewing who we are, what people think of us, and more importantly, what God knows about us. And when we come into worship, and tonight we'll talk about some of the hurdles and the problems that prevent our worship from being acceptable to God. But when we come into this place of worship, we must have this all in the presence of God, knowing that we are equally unworthy, just as Isaiah was, knowing that we have our faults and problems, and knowing that above all, God loves us in spite of who we are. Well, there are a couple of worship words here that I want us to talk about just very briefly. Proskuneo is the first word of these. 59 times. We see this in the New Testament. It's the custom of prostrating oneself before a person, to kiss the hem, to do these types of things. We'll find this depicted in movies from time to time, as you'll see someone bowing down and doing these types of things to a person of honor. And this is the concept that we have towards God as well. A king would want this done towards him, that worshipful attitude towards him as well. The second of these words is latruo, and we find that used 18 times in the New Testament. And it's a matter of service that we have, carrying out the religious duties. And in this next slide, we'll see somewhat of a comparison with this. All right. So worship, the first one, proskuneo, would involve the inner attitude of the worshiper. That's our mindset. That's our attitude towards God. That's knowing that you are God and I am not. That's knowing that I am unclean. I am flawed. I've made mistakes this week. I've made people angry. I've said things, done things, thought things that were not right. I'm not worthy to come into your presence, God. That's the attitude that we have towards God, to where we know that God is God and we are not. The second, then, is the external acts that we do in our worship, which is the latruo, the service towards him. That's when we sing out. That's when we partake of the Lord's Supper. That's when we do these things as we participate in worship. We find this in one setting here in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 10, where we find both of these words here. You shall worship proskuneo, the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve, latruo. And so we find both of those in this one setting. But when we think about what is worship, we think about these types of settings. Now, this morning, we're not going to get into the acts of worship. We'll reserve that for some later lessons on this. But let's look at a few examples of worship. And we'll go through these very quickly as we look at five or six of these examples of worship. By the way, while you're turning over to Matthew chapter 2 and verse 11, I want to remind you that today at 1:30, we have an opportunity to help conduct a worship service over at the Montreat facility. And we would invite you to come and join us there at that time. Wonderful people over there, and I know that they will be uplifted by your presence, and it's another opportunity for us to worship God and to worship along with them. Well, in Matthew chapter 2 and verse 11, here's the first example. When the wise men who were coming to see Jesus, they fall and worship him. Verse 11 says, and when they come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented to him their gifts to him. They were worshiping God. Now, what were they doing? They proskuneo. They were falling down and worshiping God, prostrating themselves at Jesus. We find this also in Matthew chapter 4, verses 8 through 10. And this is where the object is wrong. Now, remember, we need a worshiper, and we need the object, and we also need the process to be done in the proper order or proper spirit. And so here in the first time, we have the worshipers, the wise men. We don't know that it was three. The wise men come to Jesus. They worship, and Jesus is the object, and they worship him appropriately. Here we find that Satan wants Jesus to worship him. So the object of the worship is wrong. Notice this now as Jesus undergoes his temptations. Verse 8. Again, the devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain and showed him the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give to you if you will fall down and worship me. Then Jesus said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. And so here in that setting, we can find and understand that we are not supposed to be worshiping the wrong things. Obviously, Jesus is not going to worship anything else because Jesus is God. But here Satan says, you worship me and I'll give you all these things. Jesus reinforces what was previously said. You shall worship God and him only. This is the way that we should conduct our lives. Well, let's go on over to Matthew chapter 9 and beginning in verse 18, and we'll probably just stay there. But here's a man. While he spoke these things to them, behold, a ruler came and worshipped Jesus, saying, my daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her, and she will live. Now, Jesus later on in verse 25 goes in, takes her by the hand, and the girl arises. But what did the man do? His daughter had just died. He comes in and he worships Jesus, and he's begging and pleading now for Jesus to come and to revive the life of his daughter. He's worshiping Jesus. We've got the worshiper, we've got the object, and we've got the process that is there as well. In Matthew chapter 14, a couple of pages over now, in chapter 14 and verse 33. Here we find the concept, the setting of Jesus walking on the sea. We've talked about that before. Peter says, I want to walk on the water as well. Jesus says, come. He walks out and then he starts to sink. Jesus says in verse 31, oh, you of little faith, why did you have doubt? And then in verse 33, it says, then those who were on the boat came and worshiped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. It's not unreasonable for us to assume that when some miracle happens, when something spectacular happens, that our notion is, our urge is to pay homage to a person, you know, to pay our respects, to give our thanksgiving to that person, or in this case, to worship him. If someone comes and rescues us from a burning car or from a house that's collapsed or some other setting, we want to turn and give our thanks to that person. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. We can't seem to thank them enough for what they've done. And in this case, the disciples see Jesus walking on water and they know that he is the Son of God. Well, here's another example for us. Let's go over to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 17. And here we find that Paul is in Athens, and as he's walking around, he spies these objects of worship. So let's begin in verse 22. Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. Now, there's a big trend now for people to be spiritual and not religious. You know, where we have Christianity but not the church, and people trying to draw distinctions and say, well, I can be a spiritual person, but I don't have to be a part of organized religion. I don't have to be in these types of setting. I want us to realize that the way that God has this structured, we are spiritual beings. God is spirit. We'll get to John 4 in just a moment. God is spirit. And we who worship him must worship in spirit and also in truth. So here Paul is saying, I perceive that you are very religious. You are very devoted to your objects of worship. You're very devoted to your rituals of worship. You're very devoted to your religion. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, here again we find worshipers and an object of their worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you. God who made the world and everything in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and of earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives us all, gives to all life, breath, and all things. The concept here being, Paul is walking around. He sees multitudes of temples and altars and places of worship. And there were means of worshiping the acts of nature with rain and the sun and the water and those types of things. There were also temples that were erected to certain individuals or attributed to certain gods for certain things that had happened. And here was one to the unknown God. And Paul says, I'm going to explain who this God is to you. You know how that ends, but that's also an example of worship. Now let's go into John chapter 4. We're finally into our text now. Finally into our text. We're not going to spend a lot of time there. We're close to the end here. But when we think about what it means to worship, here is the how and the where of worship being uprooted. John chapter 4, the Samaritan woman, we know the story well. Jesus is there, and needs a drink. The woman comes. They begin a conversation. She becomes convinced that he is the Messiah later on in this passage. But here, when we begin in verse 19, she now perceives that he is a prophet because he's telling her things that only he would know, or only the woman would know. So the woman said to him, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, Mount Gerizim, and you say, Jews say that Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. Jesus said to her, woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know, and we worship what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. Up until this time, worship was done in these central locations. Now, there's a great advantage of having everyone come to one location because it kind of forces a sense of union and unity there together. One of the drawbacks of being in an area like this with so many churches around is sometimes people don't stop to resolve an issue before they just pop up and hop over to another church, and sheep scatter all over and go around. It's almost like musical churches at times, right? We have some that'll follow after this person, some that'll follow after that person. Listen, when we have a proper attitude for worship, it's not about our favorite preacher. It's not about our best song leader. It's not about having the most full auditorium. What it's about is about what's in here. Am I ready to worship? Here I am to worship. Here I am to bow down. Here I am to say that you're my God. What does it mean to worship now in spirit? In a nutshell, it would be those things that emanate from within us. Our inner intentions. Our attitude towards God. Knowing that He is God and I am not. It's not the cold and formal and ritualistic processes that we go through. That's what marked most of the Jewish religion of that day and of the worship styles that were there. You see, before Moses, you had Abraham and Job and others, and they set up altars and sacrifices, and they sacrificed. And then when Moses came, everything was highly structured. And then the Pharisees and others added more and more and more and more things on top of that. And it got to where it didn't matter what was in the heart. It was only the outward action towards God. And Jesus is saying here, God is spirit. And those that worship Him must worship in spirit from the heart and also in truth. And what does it mean for us to worship in truth? Doing those things that are based on what God says, based on His doctrines, based on His teachings. Now, we get into more of these in the weeks to come. But God is the object of our worship. Let's remember that. And we look to the Bible for the answers that we must have when we're thinking about worshiping in spirit and in truth. Well, I hope that you'll be back tonight as we look at the topic of does God accept our worship? And tonight we'll get into some of the specifics, some of the examples out of the Bible, some of the examples that we have for today's age of things that would prevent our worship from being acceptable to God. And I trust that our worship today has been acceptable on an individual and collective basis, because what we've done today is we've worshiped God according to the examples and the things that we derive from the New Testament. We don't find, by the way, we don't find a single instance in the New Testament where all the acts of worship that we speak of in the next few weeks, that all of these things happen in one setting at one time. But we piece these together. And we do our best, our level best, to look to God for the guide in everything that we do in life. And that's what we hope to do here. We are not the audience. God is the audience. I believe that God is pleased with our worship as a collective body. But God cannot be pleased with our worship as an individual if we are hoarding sin and having things that cause us to be separated from Him. Isaiah writes in Isaiah 59, 1 and 2, talking about the Lord and His hand, and our sins and our iniquities have separated us from God so that He will not hear us. We'll talk about this some tonight. Our sins prevent our worship from being acceptable. Our unresolved issues with brothers prevent our worship from being acceptable before Him. As a corporate body, I believe that we are acceptable before God. But as individuals, I know that there are times that not everyone here is worshiping acceptably because it's the spirit and truth together that's required. Todd has the song of encouragement that's been selected for this morning. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation this morning, we stand ready to assist you through prayers, or if you'd like to have this as the day that you put on Christ through baptism, won't you come now while we stand and while we